As renewables scale and electricity markets become increasingly complex, optimizing assets across multiple markets and revenue streams is becoming a critical competitive advantage. To learn more about the increasingly sophisticated world of energy asset optimization, I speak with Christian Seitel, Senior Battery and Market Strategy Expert from CyberGrid. He explains how forecasting, automation, and artificial intelligence are enabling faster real-time decisions as markets respond to renewable generation, negative prices, curtailment, and grid congestion. Christian also unpacks how batteries, solar PV, gas turbines, and other flexible assets can work together as part of an optimized portfolio. But technology is only part of the equation. Human expertise can't be underestimated. We also require simpler regulatory and reporting frameworks, as well as standardization, essential to unlocking the full potential of co-located energy sites. I'm Pamela Larg, and this is the Energy Transitions Podcast. Christian, thank you so much for joining us. Let's just dive straight in. Do you believe, in your opinion, that the ability to optimize a portfolio of assets is actually becoming as important as the assets themselves?
Of course, from our perspective, it was always about the optimization. And for us, an asset, one of the things we work with, and that's not only batteries, but what I think is that in the past, if you are an asset owner, especially for batteries, where you have new stakeholders, so classic investors that buy batteries and not just stakeholders that own a lot of other assets, power plants, loads, and so on. So I think in their world, it was a lot about, I want to buy the asset. And then it's important maybe that it's cheap or that it has more capacity. But really this operation, this optimization, people tend to forget about it. But yeah, I would say for them, yeah, it's important. And I would even say it's more important to really optimize good than to save a few euros when purchasing your asset. So what we see on our side, if your asset is more reliable, then of course, your companies like we can like make more monies for the asset owners. It is really a competitive field. I will start with two important aspects. So one, if you have an optimizer, have a reasonable size of a portfolio, then your behavior really influences also the prices on the market, mainly the continuous intraday markets and also the balancing services markets. So if we just say, okay, we want to optimize one asset and do this individually, then we tend to situations where with the whole portfolio, we change the prices to a level where the overall revenues, this is very important when you're thinking about optimizing a portfolio. The other asset, so we are not only battery optimizers, we have in our portfolio, we have a lot of assets, especially on balancing services. So we have hydropower plants, run river and storage. We have gas turbines and so on. And all they have their pros and cons. And we have situations where we really see in the context of the intraday prices together with the balancing prices, you maybe choose for certain situations the more expensive gas turbine over a battery because you know that the gas turbine can run for longer durations and the battery, I would need to basically when it's empty, charge via the intraday market to very, very high prices. Also, the overall revenues, they are smaller than fulfilling your balancing service activations with a gas turbine that has fuel costs but just can operate longer. Because both are things that are like, that is the second example I told you it was happening really last week, where we had very long activations, untypically long activations and high activations to also very high prices. Yeah, and then it comes really to our portfolio, in the best case, to a portfolio where we have different kind of assets, not only batteries.
I think that's a great segue into my next question. When considering a portfolio approach or co-located battery and PV assets, for example, how do you unlock the full value potential of these assets?
So looking are not at a portfolio over several locations, but really one co-located site. How we start there? So basically we have modeled all the kinds of assets and we are able to combine them in our optimization. Asset types with their also lead times, how with their costs and all that, and with their grid congestions and all the typical things that can occur. And basically we fill our optimization algorithm with that. This optimization algorithms will then decide how to operate. We have so many different inputs that basically we are not able, that one person is not able to do this without this automatic optimization. And even if so, then it would be maybe one person for one site. And if we have 20 sites, we would need 20 persons doing this all the day in the weekend. So that's just not feasible. Basically, we model it. We have modeled it. A lot of brain power went into that. And the optimization is running. And then we have our operations team that oversees that. And in situations where something fails or just things that are so rare that we decided to not model it because it's not like worth modeling all for very rare occurrences, then our operations team takes manual control of that. But in general, this is really all automated.
My next question to you, though, is how do you decide at any given moment whether a battery should provide grid services or trade in an energy market or support a PV asset? How is that decision made? Is it part of the modeling process?
So in operations, basically the optimizer decides it. So there's really in this specific moment, not the person that's doing that, but what the persons are doing, it's the optimization. But what's often forgotten are it's also the input of the optimization, and that's beside the model, it's the forecasts. So we work on forecasts and we buy different forecasts from other companies. They all are inputs for our optimization algorithm. And basically this decides where to go that. But from the basic ideas, I think it's what we have all in our gut feelings, like if there are days with a high spread on the intraday market or go to the intraday market, and if we see these are days, or it's something, sometimes it's more seasonal where you have in the balancing markets really high capacity prices, then we go more on that. So this is basically the first stage, and when we took part in the balancing services auctions, we see our results and then we optimize, and then also during the day we optimize. Also we run the optimization again and again and again. Because what always happens is like you have your forecasts, but the forecast always has errors. And then you see, okay, it's more cloudy than the forecast said. And these are the days where we have a lot of balancing service activations. Or the wind is coming 5 minutes earlier than expected. So you have maybe in this control zone more generation 5 minutes earlier, and in another control zone less, but this will then come later. So yeah, it's I would say about modeling your assets, forecasting, and then putting this in your optimization algorithm.
So it's clearly very important to be able to optimize your asset across multiple markets rather than treating each revenue stream separately. Am I correct?
Yes. And you cannot just say this is spot market arbitrage is better than balancing services, or having AFRR is always better than MFR. It's really that I would maybe even say every day is different. You have to optimize really across those several markets, and also within a day or sometimes even within a bidding block, we combine them.
That makes sense, Christian. I do have a question for you about the more digital side of things. How has automation and artificial intelligence changed the ability to make decisions in real time? And I think coupled with that is another question, because at the end of the day, it takes brain power, a human brain, to create these algorithms and to create the context for optimization. So are we seeing a perfect marriage between human and artificial intelligence?
Yes, I would agree. And I think it's nice that you also mentioned both. Nowadays, people tend to say, oh, there's this AI hype and everything is solved by AI. But we really see, no, It's not just AI. It's also the experience of humans, the brains of the humans, that those together, that they have the best results. Yeah, if you train your AI models, I would say they are basically so good as the training data is. And if we have price situations that never occurred, then it's almost impossible that your AI model will basically forecast these prices. But really, the experienced persons that oversees this and looked at it, well, I have the gut feeling that the prices are even higher tomorrow. Although we had basically the highest prices or the lowest prices of all time last day on the spot market, like we had in April and April this year. So yeah, as you said, it's a perfect marriage. Yeah, in a way, maybe I would even say they really enabled it. They not only changed it, but they really made it. Also, for the word real time, it's real that as things are fluctuating now so much, you have to react faster and you have to consider a lot of information. For this, really, automation and AI helps you to proceed or compute all these informations and extract useful information for the persons. Or in most of the cases, make automated decisions on where to bid or for which prices you want to bid. And in the end, you're competing in a field where also there's a lot of other automation. Without this automation and help of AI models, maybe they are just not quick enough to react if something really happens.
Well, this is it. We're living in an age where obviously there is a great deal of grid congestion as more renewables come onto the grid. You know, we're facing moments of negative pricing and curtailment. So it becomes absolutely critical to have this intelligent optimization and ensure that your assets can respond as quickly as possible.
So yeah, as you said, it's an interesting age. I think that's the wonderful thing about it. If we had this discussion or this talk 20 years ago, I think it would be rather boring. We decided to go on a way with renewables and they come with that. I would say it's also a field like where everything gets more and more optimized. You want to save here 10% more and there 10% more. And in the end, also these savings, like they are for economy or for society. I think it's great that we are in this time. Due to the tools we have, we can manage that. When you're talking about grid congestion, what would be the alternative? That we just build bigger and bigger and more expensive grid lines. And these are costs for our economy that we this way save.
So in a way, Christian, if you look at optimizing assets, this is really what the future is going to look like, you know, and I realize that perhaps you have a slightly biased opinion, but it does feel as if it's an intuitive and logical way to address some of the challenges that we experience as we progress through the energy transition.
Yeah, for me, it's the logical way. Yeah, like, of course, and it's not for me as an employee of my company, it's really for me as a person, as a human being, and maybe because of that, I'm in this company where I am now. But really, I really see this. We also see like the overall costs for balancing services that basically the economy has to pay. So, in a way, our earnings as a company, but the overall costs, they are also going down. So it's really that, sir. Because of all this optimization, I would say, it's good for the economy, also cheaper than the alternatives would be. And of course, like there are challenges in doing that. So when we optimize it, we see the potential and we see, okay, there still we can go further and further and further. And sometimes things are not working out because assets can always fail or there can always be a failure. But in the end, that's the way to go.
Christian, what are the biggest hurdles at the moment in terms of optimizing co-located assets and automating that process?
That's also now, I think, a very biased opinion. So in my world, like where we really we think about optimization modeling, and that's a very complex thing. But I would say we as a team, basically, we solved it. Of course, we can always improve, but we would say in principle, that's we can do. Like we can model the assets, we can model them better, but we can handle grid congestions, we can make forecasts better. But this is really, in my world, something, the hurdles that we see now is, especially in the co-location side, we have different assets from different manufacturers with different protocols, different stakeholders talking with each other, and really bringing this co-location site live with all that takes such a long of time. It's sometimes it's not even possible because like they, you need a controller that really takes this control signals on the physical level on site, distributes it, and then the controllers forget about. Maybe as a biased answer, but also because where we are working, I would say this field of optimization, handling forecasts, modeling the assets, modeling their behavior, we are in a very good way. And I wouldn't say there are barriers or hurdles. What we really face in operations is that we have different assets from different manufacturers, and you need a physical controller on site that really controls that, that handles prioritizations well. So when you have congestions, which assets to curtail and which not are. And all these combinations, there are no like standardized protocols, they all speak. So sometimes really every co-location site could be its new project with new code to implement. And this is very expensive, or just takes a long time. And I would say this is a greater barrier than really then modeling it and sending the right control signals in the right order. Another thing that we see as a, I would say, unnecessary barrier and hurdle are there's such a complex accounting and reporting where when you have several assets in your co-location site that could be in different balance groups or at least in different legal parties, and at the same time you're doing balancing services and spot market trades and do this reporting, which kilowatt hour goes to which party in which balance group, and all of them have then different grid costs. When you see you have different grid costs depending if you do balancing services or just our spot market trades, it's not rocket science, but it's complex, and I would say it's unnecessary complex. And with that comes really also costs of this effort. And when thinking about what could be really unlock the full value or full potential, that's those things. And the good thing is, like, we all can change this. Not myself, but as a society or politicians, we can decide, okay, we make this easier. We make the whole grid tariff situation less complex. So this could change. And I'm talking here specifically for Austria, as this is the country where we are located. There are similar things in other countries, but we also see that in other countries, not that complex. And then you also see that the investors are going rather in that countries and putting their battery energy storage system there. It's just easier and to operate, and you can expect higher revenues there.
I feel like you touched on it slightly, but if we look ahead, say, for example, 5-10 years from now, what will the fully optimized co-located energy site of the future look like? And what role do you think it will play in increasingly complex electricity markets?
Referring to what I first said, I think if it's fully optimized and it's really not just a bunch of co-located sites, but we have even the small Austria hundreds or thousands of the sites, I think we need standardization between of the protocols where all the assets are talking with each other. So I would say this would be something if it's really all is fully optimized and with that fully automated. I think we would have very intelligent local optimization with AI models really running there. And on top, doing this co-location things, I would say, on site in a future where we have this computation power and it's also less expensive. And then on top, we will have the orchestration and the portfolio optimization. If you have really more, with this combination, I think you can even go further within this context of portfolio optimization. In that case, I think also that the different markets or the revenue potential, like, they will converge if really everything is optimized and they will converge. And about the role they will play, I think really from economy or society wise, it will all converge to less arbitrage prices, and in the end result in, I would say, less costs than electricity costs. Maybe not the best scenario if for companies like Cybergrid. For the economy itself, it will.
Well, Christian, you do indeed paint a positive picture of the future. It certainly is an exciting space to watch. What excites you most about working in the space?
I would say it's twofold. So yes, the first thing is I really like to, solve riddles and make things just working better, optimize it. And I see this also like in my free time. So it's really that you see this is something that's working, and I think, but if I like think about this, it can even work better. So it's really something that's that's driving me. And the other thing, I really think it's for the overall good. And if I think about my children's and the world, like they should also live in this wonderful world. And the transition to 100% renewables is for myself, 100% necessary for that. But this also comes with some challenges and let's say with more complex operations. We are here to tackle this and to solve this.
Thank you for sharing. Christian, it has been such a pleasure to delve into this topic with you a little bit more and get your views on it. It's really been great to have you. Thank you so much for joining me.
Always welcome. Thank you too.
And thank you to our listeners. Till next time. Goodbye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Energy Transitions Podcast, brought to you by Enlit and Friends. That's a wrap from me, Pamela Larg, and our producer, Rian Mostert. We hope you can join us next time. Visit enlit.world or subscribe for more episodes.